This is Thunderhead Pictures Podcast. We're going to read on The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, chapter 19 through 24. So here it is. Story time, story time, story time. Brought to you by Joe Dog. Chapter 19, Attacked by the Fighting Trees. The next morning, Dorothy kissed the pretty green girl goodbye, and they all shook hands with the soldier with the green whiskers who had walked with them as far as the gate. When the guardian of the gates saw them again, they wondered greatly that they could leave the beautiful city to get into new trouble, but he at once unlocked their spectacles, which he put back into the green box and gave them many good wishes to carry with them. "You are now our ruler," he said to the Scarecrow, "so come back to us as soon as possible."
"I certainly shall if I am able," the Scarecrow replied, "but I must help Dorothy to get home first." As Dorothy bade the good-natured guardian as the last farewell, she said, "I have been very kindly treated in your lovely city, and everyone has been good to me. I cannot tell you how grateful I am."
"Don't try, my dear," he answered. "We should like to keep you with us, but if it is your wish to return to Kansas, I hope you will find a way." He then opened the gate of the outer wall, and they walked forth and started upon their journey. The sun shone brightly as they turned their faces toward the land of the south. They were all in the best of spirits and laughed and chattered together. Dorothy was once more filled with the hope of getting home, and the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman were glad to be of use to her. As for the lion, he sniffed the fresh air with delight and whisked his tail from side to side to in pure joy at being in the country again, while Toto ran around them and chased the moths and butterflies, barking merrily all the time. "City life does not agree with me at all," remarked the lion as they walked along at a brisk pace. "I have lost much flesh since I lived there, and now I am anxious for a chance to show the other beasts how courageous I have grown." They now took a last look at the Emerald City. All they could see was a mass of towers and steeples behind the green walls, and high up above everything, the spires and dome of the Palace of Oz. "Oz was not such a bad wizard after all," said the Tin Woodman, as he felt his heart rattling around in his breast. "He knew how to give me brains, and very good brains too," said the Scarecrow. "If Oz had taken a dose of the same courage he gave me," added the lion, "he would have been a brave man." Dorothy said nothing. Oz had not kept the promise he made her, but he had done his best, so she forgave him, as he said, he was a good man, even if he was a bad wizard. The first day's journey was through the green fields and the bright flowers that stretched about the Emerald City on every side. They slept that night on the grass with nothing but the stars over them, and they rested very well indeed. In the morning, they traveled on until they came to a thick wood. There was no way of going around it, for it seemed to extend to the right and left as far as they could see. Besides, they did not dare change the direction of the journey for fear of getting lost, so they looked for the place where it would be easiest to get into the forest. The Scarecrow, who was in the lead, finally discovered a big tree with such wide-spreading branches that there was room for the party to pass underneath, so he walked forward to the trees, but just as he came under the first branches,
They bent down and twined around him, and the next minute he was raised from the ground and flung headlong among his fellow travelers. This did not hurt the Scarecrow, but it surprised him, and he looked rather dizzy when Dorothy picked him up. "Here is another space between the trees," called the lion. "Let me try it first," said the Scarecrow, "for it doesn't hurt me to get thrown about." He walked up to another tree as he spoke, but its branches immediately seized him and tossed him back again. "This is strange," exclaimed Dorothy. "What shall we do? The trees seem to have made up their minds to fight us and stop our journey," remarked the lion. "I believe I would try it myself," said the woodman. And shouldering his axe, he marched up to the first tree that he had handled the Scarecrow so roughly. When a big branch bent down to seize him, the woodman chopped at it so fiercely that he cut it in two. At once, the tree began shaking all its branches as if in pain, and the Tin Woodman passed safely under it. "Come on," he shouted to the others. "Be quick." They all ran forward and passed under the tree without injury, except Toto, who was caught by a small branch and shaken until he howled. But the woodman promptly chopped off the branch and set the little dog free. The other trees of the forest did nothing to keep them back, so they made up their minds that only the first row of trees could bend down their branches, and that probably these were the policemen of the forest had given this wonderful power in order to keep strangers out of it. The four travelers walked with ease through the trees until coming to a farther edge of the wood, and to their surprise they discovered before them a high wall which seemed to be made of white china. It was smooth like surface on a dish and higher than their heads. "What shall we do now?" said Dorothy. "I will make a ladder," said the Tin Woodman, "for we certainly must climb over the wall." Chapter 20. The Dainty China Country. While the one man was making a ladder from wood, which he found in the forest, Dorothy lay down and slept, for she was tired for the long walk. The lion also curled himself up to sleep and Toto lay beside him. A scarecrow watched the woodman while he worked and said to him, "I cannot think why this wall is here or what it is made of." "Rest your brains and do not worry about the wall," replied the woodman. "When we have climbed over it, we shall know what is on the other side." After a time, the ladder was finished. It looked clumsy, but the Tin Woodman was sure it was strong and would answer their purpose. The Scarecrow wakened Dorothy and the Lion and Toto and told them that the ladder was ready. The Scarecrow climbed up the ladder first, but he was so awkward that Dorothy had to fall close behind and keep him from falling off. When he got his head over the top of the wall, the Scarecrow said, "Oh my!" "Go on," exclaimed Dorothy. So the Scarecrow climbed farther up and sat down on the top of the wall, and Dorothy put her head over and cried, "Oh my!" just as the Scarecrow had done. Then Toto came up and immediately began to bark, but Dorothy bade him be still. The lion climbed the ladder next, and the Tin Woodman came last, and both of them cried, "Oh my!" as soon as they looked over the wall. When they were all sitting in a row on the top of the wall, they looked down and saw a strange sight. Before them was a great stretch of country, having a floor as smooth and shiny and white as the bottom of a big bladder, scattered around where many houses made entirely of china and painted in the brightest colors. These houses were quite small, the biggest of them reaching only as high as Dorothy's waist. There were also pretty little barns with china fences around them, and many cows and sheep and horses and pigs and chickens, all made of china, were standing about in groups. But the strangest of all were the people who lived in the queer country. There were milkmaids and shepherdesses with bright-colored bonnets and golden spots all over their gowns, and princesses with most gorgeous frocks of silver and gold and purple, and shepherds dressed in knee breeches with pink and yellow and blue stripes down them, with golden buckles on their shoes, and princes, with jeweled crowns upon their heads, wearing ermine robes and satin doublets, and funny clowns in ruffled gowns with round red spots upon their cheeks, and tall pointed caps. And strangest of all, these people were all made of china, even to their clothes, and were so small that the tallest of them were no higher than Dorothy's knee. No one did much as look at the travelers at first, except one little purple china dog with an extra large head, which came to the wall and barked at them in a tiny voice, afterward running away again. "How shall we get down?" asked Dorothy. They found the ladder so heavy they could not pull it up, so the scarecrow fell off the wall and the others jumped down upon him so that the hard floor would not hurt their feet. Of course, they took pains not to let on his head and get the pins in their feet. When all were safely down, they picked up the scarecrow, whose body was quite flattened out, and patted his straw into shape again. We must cross the strange place in order to get to the other side, said Dorothy, for it would be unwise for us to go any other way except due south. They began walking through the country of China people, and the first thing they came to was a China milkmaid milking a China cow. As they drew near, the cow suddenly gave a kick and kicked over the stool, the pail, and even the milkmaid herself, all falling on the china ground with a great clatter. Dorothy was shocked to see that the cow had broken her leg off short and that the pail was lying in several small pieces, while the poor milkmaid had a nick in her left elbow. "There," cried the milkmaid angrily, "see what you have done. My cow has broken her leg, and I must take her to the mender's shop and have it glued on again. What do you mean by coming here and frightening my cow?" "I'm very sorry," returned Dorothy. "Please forgive us." But the pretty milkmaid was too much vexed to make any answer. She picked up the leg, sulkily, and led her cow away, the poor animal leaping on their three legs. As she left them, the milkmaid cast many reproachful glances over her shoulder at the clumsy strangers holding her knit elbow close to her side. Dorothy was quite grieved at this mishap. "We must be very careful," said the kind-hearted woodman, "or we may hurt these pretty little people so they will never get over it." A little further on, Dorothy met a most beautifully dressed young princess, who stopped short as she saw the strangers and started to run away. Dorothy wanted to see more of the princess, so she ran after her, but the china girl cried out, "Don't chase me! Don't chase me!" She had such a frightened little voice that Dorothy stopped and said, "Why not?" "Because," answered the princess, also stopping a safe distance away, "if I run, I may fall down and break myself." "But could you not be mended?" asked the girl. "Oh, yes, but one is never so pretty after being mended, you know," replied the princess. "I suppose not," said Dorothy. "Now there is Mr. Joker, one of our clowns," continued the china lady, "who is always trying to stand upon his head. He has broken himself so often that he is mended in 100 places and doesn't look at all pretty. Here he comes now, so you can see for yourself." Indeed, a jolly little clown now came walking toward them, and Dorothy could see that in spite of his pretty clothes of red and yellow and green, he was completely covered with cracks running every which way, showing plenty that he had been mended in great many places. The clown put his hands in his pockets, and after puffing out his cheeks and nodding his head at the saucily, he said, "My lady fair, why do you stare at a poor old Mr. Joker? You're quite as stiff and prim as if you eaten up a poker." "Be quiet, sir," said the princess. "Can't you see these are strangers and should be treated with respect?" "Well, that's respect, I expect," declared the clown, and immediately stood upon his head. "Don't mind Mr. Joker," said the princess to Dorothy. "He is considerably cracked in his head, and that makes him foolish." "Oh, I don't mind him a bit," said Dorothy, but you are so beautiful," she continued, "that I am sure I could love you dearly. Won't you let me carry you back to Kansas and instead you on Aunt Em's metal shelf? I could carry you in my basket." "That would make me very unhappy," answered the China princess. "You see, here in our country, we live contently and can talk and move around as we please. But whenever any of us are taken away, our joints at once stiffen and we can only stand straight and look pretty. Of course, that is all that is expected of us when we are on a metal shelves and cabinets and drawing room tables, but our lives are much pleasanter here in our own country. It would not make you unhappy for all the world," explained Dorothy, "so I'll just say goodbye." "Goodbye," replied the princess. They walked carefully through the child country. The little animals and all the people scampered out of their way, fearing the strangers would break them, and after an hour or so, the travelers reached the other side of the country and came to another china wall. It was not so high as the first, however, and by standing upon the lion's back, they all managed to scamper to the top. Then the lion gathered his legs under him and jumped onto the wall, but just as he jumped, he upset the china church with his tail and smashed it all to pieces. "That was too bad," said Dorothy, "but really, I think we were lucky in not doing these little people more harm than breaking a cow's leg and a church. They are all so brittle." "They are indeed," said the Scarecrow, "and I am thankful I am made of straw and cannot be easily damaged. There are worse things in the world than being a Scarecrow." Chapter 21, The King of the Beast. After climbing down from the China Wall, the travelers found themselves in the disagreeable country, full of bogs and marshes and covered with tall, rank grass. It was difficult to walk without falling into muddy holes, for the grass was so thick that it hid them from sight. However, by carefully picking their way, they got safely along until they reached solid ground, but here the country seemed wider than ever, and after a long and tiresome walk through the underbrush, they entered another forest where the trees were bigger and older than any they had ever seen. "This forest is perfectly delightful," declared the lion, looking around him with joy. "Never have I seen a more beautiful place." "It seems gloomy," said the Scarecrow. "Not a bit of it," answered the lion. "I should like to live here all my life. See how soft the dried leaves are under your feet, and how rich and green the moss is that clings to these old trees. Surely no wild beast could wish for a pleasanter home." "Perhaps there are wild beasts in the forest now," said Dorothy. "I suppose there are," returned the lion, "but I do not see any of them about." They walked through the forest until it became too dark to go any further. Dorothy and Toto and the lion lay down to sleep while the woodman and the Scarecrow kept watch over them. When morning came, they started again. Before they had gone far, they heard a low rumble of the ground growling of many wild animals. Toto whimpered a little, but none of the others was frightened, and they kept along the well-trodden path until they came to an opening in the wood, in which they which were gathered hundreds of beasts of every variety. They were tigers and elephants and bears and wolves and foxes and all the others in the natural history. And for a moment, Dorothy was afraid, but the lion exclaimed that the animals were holding a meeting, and he judged by their snarling and growling that they were in great trouble. As he spoke, several of the beasts caught sight of him, and at once the great assemblage hushed as if by magic. The biggest of the tigers came up to the lion and bowed, saying, "Welcome, O king of beasts. You have come in a good time to fight our enemy and bring peace to all the animals of the forest." "What is your trouble?" asked the lion quietly. "We are all threatened," answered the tiger, "by a fierce enemy which was lately come into this forest. It is a troublesome monster like a great spider with a body as big as the elephant and legs as long as a tree trunk. It has 8 of these long legs, and as the monster crawls through the forest, it seizes an animal with one of its legs and drags it to its mouth, where it eats it as a spider does a fly. Not one of us is safe while this fierce creature is alive, and we had called a meeting to decide how to take care of ourselves when you came among us." The lion thought for a moment. "Are there any other lions in the forest, this forest?" he asked. "No, there were some, but the monster has eaten them all. And besides, they were none of them nearly so large and brave as you. If I put an end to your enemy, will you bow down to me and obey me as king of the forest?" inquired the lion. "We will do that gladly," returned the tiger, and all the other beasts roared with a mighty roar. "We will." "Where is this great spider of yours?" now asked the lion. "Yonder among the oak trees," said the tiger, pointing with his forefoot. "Take good care of these friends of mine," said the lion, "and I will go at once to fight the monster." He bade his comrades goodbye and marched proudly away to do battle with the enemy. The great spider was lying asleep when the lion found it, and it looked so ugly that its foe turned up his nose in disgust. Its legs were quite as long as the tiger had said, and its body was covered with coarse black hair. It had a great mouth with a row of sharp teeth, a foot long, but its head was joined to the pungy body by a neck as slender as a wasp waist. This gave the lion a hint of the best way to attack the creature, and as he knew it was easy to fight it asleep than awake, he gave a great spring and landed directly upon the monster's back. Then, with one blow of his heavy paw, armed with sharp claws, he knocked the spider's head from its body. Jumping down, he watched it until the long legs stopped wiggling. Then he knew it was quite dead. The lion went back to the opening where the beasts of the forest were waiting for him and said proudly, "You need fear your enemy no longer." Then the beasts bowed down the lion as their king, and he promised to come back and rule over them as soon as Dorothy was safely on her way to Kansas. Chapter 22. The Country of the Quadlings. The four travelers passed through the rest of the forest in safety, and when they came out from its gloom, they saw before them a steep hill covered from top to bottom with great pieces of rock. "That will be hard climb," said Scarecrow, "but we must get over the hill." So he led the way up, and the others followed. They had nearly reached the first rock when they heard a rough voice cry out, "Keep back! Who are you?" asked the Scarecrow. Then a head showed itself over the rock, and the same voice said, "This hill belongs to us, and we don't allow anyone to cross it." "But we must cross it," said the Scarecrow. "We're going to the country of the Crownlings, but you shall not," replied the voice, and there stepped from the rock the strangest man the travelers had ever seen. He was quite short and stout, and he had a big head which was flat at the top and supported by a thick neck full of whiskers, but he had no arms at all, and seeing this, the Scarecrow did not fear that so helpless a creature could prevent them from climbing the hill. So he said, "I'm sorry not to do as you wish, but we must pass over your hill whether you like it or not." And he walked boldly forward as quick as lightning. The man's head shot forward and his neck stretched out until the top of the head where it was flat struck the Scarecrow in the middle and set him tumbling over and over down the hill. Almost as quickly as it came, the head went back to the body, and the man laughed harshly. "It isn't as easy as you think." A chorus of boisterous laughter came from the other rocks, and Dorothy saw hundreds of armless hammerheads upon the hillside, one behind every rock. The line became quite angry at the laughter. Caused by the Scarecrow's mishap, and giving a loud roar that echoed there like thunder, he dashed up the hill. Again, a head shot swiftly out, and the great lion went rolling down the hill as if he had been struck by a cannonball. Dorothy ran down and helped the Scarecrow to his feet, and the lion came up to her feeling rather bruised and sore, and said, "It is useless to fight people with shooting heads. No one can withstand them." "What can we do, then?" she asked. "Call the winged monkeys," suggested the Tin Woodman. "You still have the right to command them once more." "Very well," she answered, and putting on the golden cap, she uttered the magic words. The monkeys were as prompt as ever, and in a few moments, the entire band stood before her. "What are your commands?" inquired the king of the monkeys, bowing. "No, carry us all over the hill to the country of the Quetlings," answered the girl. "It shall be done," said the king, and at once the winged monkeys caught the four travelers and tore them up in their arms and flew away with them. As they passed over the hill, the hammerheads yelled with vexation and shut their heads high in the air, but they could not reach the winged monkeys, which carried Dorothy and her comrades safely over the hill and set them down in the beautiful country of the Quetlings on the other side. "This is the last time you can summon us," said the leader to Dorothy. "So goodbye and good luck to you." "Goodbye and thank you very much," returned the girl. The monkeys rose into the air and were out of sight in a twinkling. The country of the Quetlings seemed rich and happy. There was field upon field of ripening grain with well-paved roads running between and pretty rippling brooks with straw bridges across them. The fences and the bridges and houses were all painted bright red, just as they had been painted yellow in the country of the Winkies and blue in the country of the Munchkins. The Quetlings themselves, who were short and fat and looked chubby and good-natured, were dressed all in red, which showed bright against the green grass and the yellowing grain. The monkeys had set them down near a farmhouse, and the four travelers walked up to it and knocked at the door. It was opened by the farmer's wife, and then Dorothy asked for something to eat. The woman gave them all a good dinner, with three kinds of cake and four kinds of cookies and a bowl of milk for total. "How far is it to the castle of Glinda?" asked the child. "It is not a great way," answered the farmer's wife. "Take the road to the south, and you will soon reach it." thanking the good woman, they started afresh and walked by the fields and across the pretty bridges until they saw before them a great beautiful castle. Before the gates were three young girls dressed in handsome red uniforms trimmed with gold braid. As Dorothy approached, one of the girls said to her, "Why have you come to the South Country to see the good witch who rules here?" She answered, "Will you take me to her? Let me have your names, and I will ask Glinda if she would receive you." They told who they were, and the girl soldier went into the castle. After a few moments, she came back to say that Dorothy and the others were to be admitted at once. Chapter 23, The Good Witch. Before they went to see Glinda, however, they were taken to a room of the castle where Dorothy washed her face and combed her hair. The lion shook the dust out of his mane. The scarecrow patted himself into his best shape. And the woodman polished his tin and oiled his joints. When they were all quite presentable, they followed the soldier girl into a big room where the witch Glinda sat upon a throne of rubies. She was both beautiful and young to their eyes. Her hair was a rich red in color and fell in flowing ridges over her shoulder. Shoulders. Her dress was pure white, and her eyes were blue, and they looked kindly upon the little girl. "What can I do for you, my child?" she asked. Dorothy told the witch all her story, how the cyclone had brought her to the land of Oz, how she had found her companions, and of the wonderful adventures they had had. "My greatest wish now," she ended, "is to get back to Kansas, for Aunt Em will surely think something dreadful has happened to me, and that will make her put on mourning, and unless the crops are better this year than they were last, I am sure that Uncle Henry cannot afford it." Glinda leaned forward and kissed the sweet, upturned face of the lovely little girl. "Bless your dear heart," she said. "I am sure I can tell you of a way to get back to Kansas." Then she added, "But if I do, you must give me the golden cap." "Really," exclaimed Dorothy. "Indeed, it is no use to me now, and when you have it, you can command the winged monkeys three times." "And I think I should need their service just those three times," answered Glinda, smiling. Dorothy then gave her the golden cap, and the witch said to the scarecrow, "What will you do when Dorothy has left us?" "I will return to the Emerald City," he replied, "for Oz has made me its ruler, and the people like me. The only thing that worries me is how to cross the Hill of Hammerheads. By the means of the golden cap, I shall command the winged monkeys to fly you to the gates of the Emerald City," said Glinda, "for it would be a shame to deprive the people of so wonderful a ruler." "Am I really wonderful?" asked the Scarecrow. "You are unusual," replied Glinda, turning to the Tin Woodman. She asked, "What will become of you when Dorothy leaves this country?" He leaned on his axe and thought for a moment. Then he said, "The Winkies were very kind to me and wanted me to rule over them after the wicked witch died. I am fond of the Winkies, and if I could get back again to the country of the West, I should like nothing better than to rule over them forever." "My second command to the winged monkeys," said Glinda, "will be that they carry you safely to the land of Winkies. Your brains may not be so large to look at as those of the Scarecrow, but you are really brighter than he is when you are well polished, and I am sure you will rule the Winkies both wisely and well." Then the witch looked at the big shaggy lion and asked, "When Dorothy has returned to her own home, what will become of you?" "Over the Hill of the Hammerheads," he answered, "lies a grand old forest, and all the beasts that live there have made me their king. If I could only get back to this forest, I would pass my life very happily there. My third command to the winged monkey, said Glinda, shall be to carry you to your forest, and having used up the powers of the golden cap, I shall give it to the king of monkeys, that he and his band may thereafter be free forever. The Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman and the Lion now thanked the Good Witch earnestly for her kindness, and Dorothy exclaimed, "You are certainly as good as you are beautiful, but you have not yet told me how to get back to Kansas. Your silver shoes will carry you over the desert," replied Glinda. "If you had known their power, you could have gone back to your Aunt Em the very first day you came to this country. But then I should not have had my wonderful brain," said the Scarecrow. "I might have passed my whole life in the farmer's cornfield, and I should not have had my lovely heart," said the Tin Woodman. "I might have stood and rested in the forest till the end of the world. And I should have lived a coward forever," declared the Lion. "And no beast in all the forest would have had a good word to say to me." "This is all true," said Dorothy, "and I am glad I was of use to these good friends. But now that each of them has what he must desire, and each is happy in having a kingdom to rule. Besides, I think I should like to go back to Kansas." "The Silver Shoes," said the Good Witch, "have wonderful powers, and one of the most curious things about them is that they can carry you to any place in the world in 3 steps, and each step will be made in the wink of an eye. All you have to do is to knot the heels together 3 times and command the shoes to carry you wherever you wish to go." "If that is so," said the child joyfully, "I will ask them to carry me back to Kansas at once." She threw her arms around the Lion's neck and kissed him, patting his big head tenderly. Then she kissed the Woodman, Tin Woodman, who was weeping in a very most dangerous to his joints, but she hugged the soft, stuffed body of the Scarecrow in her arms instead of kissing his painted face, and she found she was crying herself at the sorrowful parting from her lovely comrades. Glinda, the good, stepped down from her ruby throne to give the little girl a goodbye kiss, and Dorothy thanked her for all the kindness she had shown to her friends and herself. Dorothy now took Toto up soundly in her arms, and having said one last goodbye, she clapped the heels of her shoes together 3 times, saying, "Take me home to Aunt Em." Instantly, she was whirling through the air so swiftly that all she could see or feel was the wind whistling past her ears. The silver shoes took but 3 steps, and then she stopped so suddenly that she rolled over upon the grass several times before she knew where she was. At length, however, she sat up and looked about her. "Good gracious," she cried, for she was sitting on the broad Kansas prairie, and just before her was the new farmhouse Uncle Henry built after the cyclone had carried away his old one. Uncle Henry was milking the cows in the barnyard, and Toto had jumped out of her arms and was running toward the barn, barking joyously. Dorothy stood up and found she was in her stocking feet, for the silver shoes had fallen off in her flight through the air, and they were lost forever in the desert. Chapter 24. Home Again. Aunt Em had just come out of the house to water the cabbages when she looked up and saw Dorothy running toward her. "My darling child," she cried, folding the little girl in her arms and covering her face with kisses. "Where in the world did you come from?" "From the Land of Oz," said Dorothy gravely, "and here is Toto too, and oh, Aunt Em, I'm so glad to be home again. The End of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, unabridged by L. Frank Baum. Sorry that it took a long time to finish that. I was a little busy, and the software I was the host I was using wasn't letting me record. So this is Thunderhead Pictures Podcast. Reading The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. See you later. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. Adios, amigos.